true then. Horsehair is always better than thread for sewing up a wound, she said. She didn't say why, and I never did think to ask her. Mama asked me if any of Yeller's entrails had been cut, and I told her that I didn't think so. Well, I won't bother with them then, she said. Anyway, if they are, I don't think I could fix them. It was a long, slow job, sewing up old Yeller's belly, and the way his flesh would flinch and quiver when Mama poked the needle through, it must have hurt. But if it did, old Yeller didn't say anything about it. He just lay there and licked my hands while I held him. We were wrapping him up in some clean rags that Mama had brought along when here came little Arliss. He was running as hard as he'd been when he left. He was grinning and hollering at Mama, and in his right hand he carried a green-striped lizard, too. How on earth he'd managed to catch anything as fast running as one of those green-striped lizards, I don't know, but he sure had one. You never saw such a proud look as he wore on his face when I handed the lizard to Mama. And I don't guess I ever saw a more helpless look on Mama's face as she took it. Mama had always been squeamish about lizards and snakes and bugs and things, and you could tell that it just made her flesh crawl to have to touch this one. But she took it and admired it and thanked Arliss. Then she asked him if he'd keep it for her till we got home, which little Arliss was glad to do. Now, Arliss, she told him, we're going to play a game. We're playing like old Yeller is sick, and you are taking care of him. We're going to let you both ride on a cowhide, like the sick Indians do sometimes. It always pleased little Arliss to play any sort of game, and this was a new one that he'd never heard about before. He was so anxious to get started that we could hardly keep him out from underfoot till Mama could get things ready. As soon as she took the cowhide off Jumper's back and spread it hair side down upon the ground, I began to get the idea. She placed the soft pillows on top of the hide, then helped me to ease old Yeller's hurt body onto the pillows. Now, Arliss, Mama said, you sit there on the pillows with old Yeller and help hold him on. But remember now, don't play with him or get on top of him. We're playing like he's sick, and when your dog is sick, you have to be real careful with him. It was a fine game, and little Arliss fell right in with it. He sat where Mama told him to. He held old Yeller's head in his lap, waiting for the ride to start. It didn't take long. I'd already tied a rope around Jumper's neck, leaving the loop big enough that it would pull back against his shoulders. Then, on each side of Jumper, we tied another rope into the one knotted about his shoulders, and carried the ends of them back to the cowhide. I took my knife and cut two slits into the edge of the cowhide, then tied a rope into each one. We measured to get each rope the same length and made sure they were far enough back that the cowhide wouldn't touch Jumper's heels. Like most mules, Jumper was mighty fussy about anything touching his heels. "Now, Travis, you ride him," Mama said, "and I'll lead him." "You better let me walk," I argued. "Jumper's liable to throw a fit with that hide rattling along behind him, and you might not can hold him by yourself." "You ride him," Mama said. "I don't want you walking on that leg any more. If Jumper acts up one time, I'll take a club to him." We started off with little Arliss crowing at what a fine ride he was getting on the dragging hide. Sure enough, at the first sound of that rattling hide, old Jumper acted up. He snorted and tried to lunge to one side, but Mama yanked down on his bridle and said, "Jumper, you wretch!" I whacked him between the ears with a dead stick. With the two of us coming at him like that, it was more than Jumper wanted. He settled down and went to traveling as quiet as he generally pulled a plow, with just now and then bending his neck around to take a look at what he was dragging. You could tell he didn't like it, but I guess he figured he'd best put up with it. Little Arliss never had a finer time than he did on that ride home. He enjoyed every long hour of it, and a part of the time I don't guess it was too rough on old Yeller. The cowhide dragged smooth and even, as long as we stayed in the sandy wash. When we left the wash and took out across the flats, it still didn't look bad. Mama led Jumper in a long, roundabout way, keeping as much as she could to the openings where the tall grass grew. The grass would bend down before the hide, making a soft cushion over which the hide slipped easily. But this was a rough country, and try as hard as she could, Mama couldn't always dodge the rocky places. The hide slid over the rocks the same as over the grass and sand, but it couldn't do it without jolting the riders pretty much. Little Arliss would laugh when the hide raked along over the rocks and jolted him till his teeth rattled. He got as much fun out of that as the rest of the ride. But the jolting hurt old Yeller till sometimes he couldn't hold back his whinings. When Yeller's whimperings told us he was hurting too bad, we'd have to stop and wait for him to rest up. At other times, we stopped to give him water. Once we got water out of a little spring that trickled down through the rocks. The next time was at Birdsong Creek. Mama had packed water to him in my hat. He was too weak to get up and drink, so Mama would hold the water right under his nose, and I'd lift him up off the pillows and hold him close enough that he could reach down and lap the water up with his tongue. Having to travel so far and so slow and with so many halts, it looked like we'd never get him home. But we finally made it just about the time it got dark enough for the stars to show. By then, my hurt leg was plenty stiff, stiff and numb. It was all swelled up and felt as dead as a chunk of wood. When I slid down off Jumper's back, it wouldn't hold me. I fell clear to the ground and lay in the dirt, too tired and hurt to get up. Mama made a big to-do about how weak and hurt I was, but I didn't mind. We'd gone and brought old Yeller home, and he was still alive. There by the starlight, I could see him licking little Arliss's face. Little Arliss was sound asleep.
This book is continued on Disc 4. Disc 4.
Chapter 12. For the next couple of weeks, old Yeller and I had a rough time of it. I lay on the bed inside the cabin, and Yeller lay on the cowhide in the dog run, and we both hurt so bad that we were wallowing and groaning and whimpering all the time. Sometimes I hurt so bad that I didn't quite know what was happening. I'd hear grunts and groans and couldn't tell if they were mine or Yeller's. My leg had swelled up till it was about the size of a butter churn. I had such a wild, hot fever that Mama nearly ran herself to death, packing fresh cold water from the spring, which she used to bathe me all over, trying to run my fever down. When she wasn't packing water, she was out digging prickly pear roots and hammering them to mush in a sack, then binding the mush to my leg for a poultice. We had lots of prickly pear growing close to the house, but they were the big, tall ones, and their roots were no good. The kind that make a good poultice are the smaller size. They don't have much top, but lots of knotty roots, shaped sort of like sweet potatoes. That kind didn't grow close to the house. Along at the last, Mama had to go clear over to the salt licks to locate that kind. When Mama wasn't waiting on me, she was taking care of Old Yeller. She waited on him just like she did me. She was getting up all hours of the night to doctor our wounds, bathe us in cold water, and feed us when she could get us to eat. On top of that, there were the cows to milk, little Arliss to look after, clothes to wash, wood to cut, and Old Jumper to worry with. The bad drought that Bud Searcy predicted had come. The green grass all dried up, till Jumper was no longer satisfied to eat it. He took to jumping the field fence and eating the corn that I'd never yet gotten around to gathering. Mama couldn't let that go on. That was our bread corn. Without it, we'd have no bread for the winter. But it looked like for a while that there wasn't any way to save it. Mama would go to the field and run Jumper out. Then before she got her back turned good, he'd jump back in and go to eating corn again. Finally, Mama figured out a way to keep Jumper from jumping. She tied a drag to him. She got a rope and tied one end of it to his right forefoot. To the other end, she tied a big, heavy chunk of wood. By pulling hard, Jumper could move his drag along enough to graze and get to water. But any time he tried to rear up for a jump, the drag held him down. The drag on Jumper's foot saved the corn, but it didn't save Mama from a lot of work. Jumper was always getting his chunk of wood hung up behind a bush or rock so that it couldn't get away. Then he'd have himself a big scare and rear up, fighting the rope and falling down and pitching and bawling. If Mama didn't hear him right away, he'd start braying, and he'd keep it up till she went and loosened the drag. Altogether, Mama sure had her hands full, and little Arliss wasn't any help. He was too little to do any work, and with neither of us to play with, he got lonesome. He'd follow Mama around every step she made, getting in the way, and feeling hurt because she didn't have time to pay him any mind. When he wasn't pestering her, he was pestering me. A dozen times a day, he'd come in to stare at me and say, "What you doing in bed, Travis? Why don't you get up? Why don't you get up and come play with me?" He nearly drove me crazy, till the day Bud Searcy and Lisbeth came, bringing the pup. I didn't know about the pup at first. I didn't even know that Lisbeth had come. I heard Bud Searcy's talk to Mama when they rode up, but I was hurting too bad even to roll over and look out the door. I remember just lying there, being mad at Searcy for coming. I knew what a bother he'd be to Mama. For all his talk of looking after the women and children of Salt Licks while the men were gone, I knew he'd never turn a hand to any real work. You wouldn't catch him offering to chop wood or gather in a corn crop. All he'd do was sit out under the dog run all day, talking and chewing tobacco and spitting juice all over the place. On top of that, he'd expect Mama to cook him up a good dinner and maybe a supper if he took a notion to stay that long. And Mama had 10 times too much to do like it was. In a little bit, though, I heard a quiet step at the door. I looked up. It was Lisbeth. She stood with her hands behind her back, staring at me with her big, solemn eyes. "You hurting pretty bad?" she asked. I was hurting her plenty, but I wasn't admitting it to a girl. "I'm doing all right," I said. "We didn't know you'd got hog cut, or we'd have come sooner," she said. I didn't know what to say to that, so I didn't say anything. Well, anyhow, she said, I brung you a surprise. I was too sick and worn out to care about a surprise right then, but there was such an eager look in her eyes that I knew I had to say, what? Or hurt her feelings. So I said, what? One of Miss Prissy's pups, she said. She brought her hands around from behind her back. In the right one, she held a dog pup about as big as a year-old possum. It was a dirty white in color, and speckled all over with blue spots about the size of cow ticks. She held it by the slack hide at the back of its neck. It hung there, half asleep, sagging in its own loose hide like it was dead. Born in a badger hole, she said. 7 of them. I brung you the best one. I thought, if that puny-looking thing is the best one, Miss Prissy must have had a sorry litter of pups. But I didn't say so. I said, he sure looks like a dandy. He is, Lisbeth said. See how I've been holding him all this time, and he hasn't said a word. I'd heard that one all my life, that if a pup didn't holler when you held him up by the slack hide of his neck, he was sure to turn out to be a gritty one. I didn't think much of that sign. Papa always put more stock in what color was inside a pup's mouth. If the pup's mouth was black inside, Papa said that was the one to choose. And that's the way I felt about it. But right now, I didn't care if the pup's mouth was pea green on the inside. All I wanted was just to quit hurting. I said, I guess little Arliss will like it. Then, knew I'd said the wrong thing. I could tell by the look in her eyes that I'd hurt her feelings after all. She didn't say anything. She just got real still and quiet and kept staring at me till I couldn't stand it and had to look away. Then she turned and went out of the cabin and gave the pup to little Arliss. It made me mad, her looking at me like that. What did she expect, anyhow? Here I was laid up with a bad hog cut, hurting so bad I could hardly get my breath, and her expecting me to make a big to-do over a little old puny speckled pup. I had me a dog. Old Yeller was all cut up, worse than I was, but he was getting well. Mama had told me that. So what use did I have for a pup? Be all right for little Arliss to play with, keep him occupied and out from underfoot. But when old Yeller and I got well and took to the woods again, we wouldn't have time to wait around on a fool pup, too little to follow. I lay there in bed, mad and fretful, all day, thinking how silly it was for Lisbeth to expect me to want a pup when I already had me a full-grown dog. I lay there just waiting for a chance to tell her so, too. Only she never did come back to give me a chance. She stayed outside and played with little Arliss and the pup till her grandpa finally wound up his talking and tobacco spitting and got ready to leave. Then I saw her and little Arliss come past the door, heading for where I could hear her grandpa saddling his horse. She looked in at me, then looked away. And suddenly I wasn't mad at her anymore. I felt sort of mean. I wished now I could think of the right thing to say about the pup so I could call her back and tell her. I didn't want her to go off home with her feelings still hurt. But before I could think of anything, I heard her grandpa say to Mama, Now, Mrs. Coates, y'all are in a sort of bind here with your man gone and that boy crippled up. I've been sitting out here all evening worrying about it. That's my responsibility, you know, seeing that everybody's taken care of while the men are gone. And I think now I got a way figured. I'll just leave our girl Lisbeth here to help you all out. Mama said in a surprised voice, Why, Mr. Searcy, there's no need for that. It's mighty kind of you and all, but we'll make out all right. No now, Mrs. Coates. You got too big a load to carry all by yourself. My Elizabeth, she'll be proud to help out. But, Mama argued, she's such a little girl, Mr. Searcy. She's probably never stayed away from home of a night. She's little, Bud Searcy said, but she's stout and willing. She's like me. When folks are in trouble, she'll pitch right in and do her part. You just keep her here now. You'll see what a big help she'll be. Mama tried to argue some more, but Bud Searcy wouldn't listen. He just told Elizabeth to be a good girl and help Mama out, like she was used to helping out at home. Then he mounted and rode on off. Chapter 13. I was like Mama. I didn't think Elizabeth Searcy would be any help around the place. She was too little and too skinny. I figured she'd just be an extra bother for Mama. But we were wrong. Just like Bud Searcy said, she was a big help. She could tote water from the spring. She could feed the chickens, pack in wood, cook cornbread, wash dishes, wash little Arliss, and sometimes even change the prickly pear poultice on my leg. She didn't have to be told, either. She was right there on hand all the time, just looking for something to do. She was a lot better about that than I ever was. She wasn't as big, and she couldn't do as much as I could, but she was more willing. She didn't even back off when Mama hooked Jumper to the cart and headed for the field to gather in the corn. That was a job I always hated. It was hot work, and the corn shucks made my skin itch and sting till sometimes I'd wake up at night scratching like I'd stumbled into a patch of bull nettles. But it didn't seem to bother Elizabeth. In fact, it looked like she and Mama and little Arliss had a real good time gathering corn. I'd see them drive past the cabin, all three of them sitting on top of a cartload of corn. They would be laughing and talking and having such a romping big time playing with the speckled pup that before long I half wished I was able to gather corn too. In a way, it sort of hurt my pride for a little old girl like Elizabeth to come in and take over my jobs. Papa had left me to look after things, but now I was laid up, and here was a girl handling my work about as good as I could. Still, she couldn't get out and mark hogs or kill meat or swing a chopping axe. Before they were finished gathering corn, however, we were faced with a trouble a whole lot too big for any of us to handle. The first hint of it came when the spot heifer failed to show up one evening at milking time. Mama had come in too late from the corn gathering to go look for her before dark, and the next morning she didn't need to. Spot came up by herself, or rather, she came past the house. I heard her first. The swelling in my leg was about gone down. I was weak as a rain-chilled chicken, but most of the hurting had stopped. I was able to sit up in bed a lot and take notice of things. I heard a cow coming toward the house. She was bawling like cows do when they've lost a calf or when their bags are stretched too tight with milk. I recognized Spot's voice. Spot's calf recognized it, too. It had stood hungry in the pen all night, and now it was nearly crazy for a bait of milk. I could hear it blatting and racing around in the cow pen, so starved it could hardly wait. I called to Mama. Mama, I said, you better go let old Spot into her calf. I hear her coming. That pesky Spot, I heard her say impatiently. I don't know what's got into her, staying out all night like that and letting her calf go hungry. I heard Mama calling to Spot as she went out to the cow pen. A little later, I heard Spot beller like a fighting bull, then Mama's voice rising high and sharp. Then here came Mama running into the cabin, calling for Lisbeth to hurry and bring in little Arliss. There was scare in Mama's voice. I sat up in bed as Lisbeth came running in, dragging little Arliss after her. Mama slammed the door shut, then turned to me. "Spot made fight at me," she said. "I can't understand it. It was like I was some varmint that she'd never seen before." Mama turned and opened the door a crack. She looked out, then threw the door wide open and stood staring toward the cow pen. "Why, look at her now," she said. "She's not paying one bit of attention to her calf. She's just going on past the cow pen like her calf wasn't there. She's acting as crazy as if she'd got hold of a beta pea vine." There was a little pea vine that grew wild all over the hills during wet winters and bloomed pale lavender in the spring. Cattle and horses could eat it, mixed with grass, and get fat on it. But sometimes when they got too big a bait of it alone, it poisoned them. Generally, they'd stumble around with the blind staggers for a while, then gradually get well. Sometimes, though, the pea vine killed them. I sat there for a moment listening to Spot. She was bawling again like when I first heard her. But now she was heading off into the brush again, leaving her calf to starve. I wondered where she'd gotten enough pea vine to hurt her. "But Mama," I said, "she couldn't have eaten pea vine. The pea vine is all dead and gone this time of year." Mama turned and looked at me, then looked away. "I know," she said. "That's what's got me so worried." I thought of what Burn Sanderson had told me about animals that didn't act right. I said, "Cows don't ever get hydrophobia, do they?" I saw Lisbeth start at the word. She stared at me with big, solemn eyes. "I don't know," Mama said. "I've seen dogs with it, but I've never heard of a cow brute having it. I just don't know." In the next few days, while Old Yeller and I healed fast, we all worried and watched. All day and all night, Spot kept right on doing what she did from the start. She walked and she bawled. She walked mostly in a wide circle that brought her pretty close to the house about twice a day, and then carried her so far out into the hills that we could just barely hear her. She walked with her head down. She walked slower, and her bawling got weaker as she got weaker, but she never stopped walking and bawling. When the bull came, he was worse, and a lot more dangerous. He came 2 or 3 days later. I was sitting out under the dog run at the time. I'd hobbled out to sit in a chair beside Old Yeller, where I could scratch him under his chewed-off ear. That's where he liked to be scratched best. Mama was in the kitchen cooking dinner. Lisbeth and little Arliss had gone off to the creek below the spring to play with the pup and to fish for catfish. I could see them running and laughing along the bank, chasing after grasshoppers for bait. Then I heard this moaning sound and turned to watch a bull come out of the brush. He was the roan bull, the one that the droopy-horned chongo had dumped into the Mexican cart the day of the fight. But it didn't walk like any bull I'd ever seen before. He walked with his head hung low and wobbling. He reeled and staggered like he couldn't see where he was going. He walked head on into a mesquite tree like it wasn't there, and fell to his knees when he hit it. He scrambled to his feet and came on, grunting and staggering and moaning, heading toward the spring. Right then, for the first time since we'd brought him home, Old Yeller came up off his cowhide bed. He'd been lying there beside me, paying no attention to sight or sound of the bull. Then, I guess the wind must have shifted and brought him the bull's scent. And evidently, that scent told him for certain what I was only beginning to suspect. He rose with a savage growl. He moved out toward the bull, so trembly weak that he could hardly stand. His loose lips were lifted in an ugly snarl, baring his white fangs. His hackles stood up in a ragged ridge along the back of his neck and shoulders. Watching him, I felt a prickling at the back of my own neck. I'd seen him act like that before, but only when there was the greatest danger, never while just facing a bull. Suddenly I knew that Mama and I had been fooling ourselves. Up till now we'd been putting off facing up to facts. We'd kept hoping that the heifer Spot would get over whatever was wrong with her. Mama and Lisbeth had kept Spot's calf from starving by letting it suck another cow. They had had to tie the cow's hind legs together to keep her from kicking the calf off, but they'd kept it alive, hoping Spot would get well and come back to it. Now I knew that Spot wouldn't get well, and this bull wouldn't either. I knew they were both deathly sick with hydrophobia. Old Yeller had scented that sickness in this bull and somehow sensed how fearfully dangerous it was. I thought of Lisbeth and little Arliss down past the spring. I came up out of my chair calling for Mama. Mama, I said, bring me my gun, Mama. Mama came hurrying to the door. What is it, Travis? She wanted to know. That bull, I said, pointing. He's mad with hydrophobia, and he's heading straight for Lisbeth and little Arliss. Mama took one look and said, oh, my Lord, in almost a whisper. She didn't wait to get me my gun or anything else. She just tore out for the creek, hollering for Lisbeth and little Arliss to run, to climb a tree, to do anything to get away from the bull. I called after her, telling her to wait, to give me a chance to shoot the bull. I don't guess she ever heard me. But the bull heard her. He tried to turn on her, stumbled, and went to his knees. Then he was back on his feet again as Mama went flying past. He charged straight for her. He'd have gotten her, too, only the sickness had his legs too wobbly. This time when he fell, he rooted his nose into the ground and just lay there, moaning, too weak even to try to get up again. By this time, Old Yeller was there, baying the bull, keeping out of his reach, but ready to eat him alive if he ever came to his feet again. I didn't wait to see more. I went and got my gun. I hobbled down to where I couldn't miss and shot the roan bull between the eyes. Chapter 14. We couldn't leave the dead bull to lie there that close to the cabin. In a few days, the scent of rotting flesh would drive us out. Also, the carcass lay too close to the spring. Mama was afraid it would foul up our drinking water. We'll have to try to drag it further from the cabin and burn it, she said. Burn it, I said in surprise. Why can't we just leave it for the buzzards and varmints to clean up? Because that might spread the sickness, Mama said. If the varmints eat it, they might get the sickness too. Mama went to put the harness on Jumper. I sent Lisbeth to bring me a rope. I doubled the rope and tied it in a loop around the bull's horns. Mama brought Jumper, who snorted and shied away at the sight of the dead animal. Jumper had smelled deer blood plenty of times, so I guess it was the size of the bull that scared him. Or maybe, like Yeller, Jumper could scent the dead bull's sickness. I had to talk mean and threaten him with a club before we could get him close enough for Mama to hook the single tree over the loop of rope I'd tied around the bull's horns. Then the weight of the bull was too much for him. Jumper couldn't drag it. He leaned into his collar and dug in with his hoofs. He grunted and strained. He pulled till I saw the big muscles of his haunches flatten and start quivering. But the best he could do was slide the bull carcass along the ground for about a foot before he gave up. I knew he wasn't throwing off. Jumper was full of a lot of pesky, aggravating mule tricks. But when you called on him to move a load, he'd move it or bust something. I called on him again. I drove him at a different angle from the load, hoping he'd have better luck. He didn't. He threw everything he had into the collar, and all it did was pop a link out of his right trace chain. The flying link whistled past my ear with the speed of a bullet. It would have killed me just as dead if it had hit me. Well, that was it. There was no moving the dead bull now. We could patch up that broken trace for pulling an ordinary load, but it would never be strong enough to pull this one, even if Jumper was. I looked at Mama. She shook her head. "I guess there's nothing we can do but burn it here," she said. "But it's going to take a sight of wood gathering." It did, too. We'd lived there long enough to use up all the dead wood close to the cabin. Now, Mama and Elizabeth had to go way out into the brush for it. I got a piece of rawhide string and patched up the trace chain, and Mama and Elizabeth used Jumper to drag up big dead logs. I helped them pile the logs on top of the bull. We piled them up till we had the carcass completely covered, then set fire to them. In a little bit, the fire was roaring. Sheets of hot flame shot high into the air. The heat and the stench of burnt hair and scorching hide drove us back. It was the biggest fire I'd ever seen. I thought there was fire enough there to burn three bulls. But when it began to die down a couple of hours later, the bull carcass wasn't half burnt up. Mama and Elizabeth went back to dragging up more wood. It took 2 days and nights to burn up that bull. We worked all day long each day, with Mama and Elizabeth dragging up the wood and me feeding the stinking fire. Then at night we could hardly sleep. This was because of the howling and snarling and fighting of the wolves, lured to the place by the scent of the roasting meat. The wolves didn't get any of it. They were too afraid of the hot fire. But that didn't keep them from gathering from miles around and making the nights hideous with their howlings and snarlings. And all night long, both nights, Old Yeller crippled back and forth between the fire and the cabin, baying savagely, warning the wolves to keep away. Both nights I lay there, watching the eyes of the shifting wolves glow like live mesquite coals in the firelight, and listening to the weak, moaning bawl of old Spot, still traveling in a circle. I lay there feeling shivery with a fearful dread that brought up pictures in my mind of Bud Searcy's uncle. I sure did wish Papa would come home. As soon as the job of burning the bull was over, Mama told us we had to do the same for the Spot heifer. That was all Mama said about it. But I could tell by the look in her eyes how much she hated to give up. She'd had great hopes for Spot's making us a real milk cow, especially after Old Yeller had gentled her so fast. But that was all gone now. Mama looked tired and more worried than I think I'd ever seen her. I guess she couldn't help thinking what I was thinking, that if hydrophobia had sickened one of our cows, it just might get them all. "I'll do the shooting," I told her. "But I'm going to follow her out a ways from the house to do it, closer to some wood. How about your leg? Mama asked. That leg's getting all right, I told her. Think it'll do it some good to be walked on. Well, try to kill her on bare ground, Mama cautioned. As dry as it is now, we'll be running a risk of setting the woods afire if there's much old grass around the place. I waited till Spot circled past the cabin again, then took my gun and followed her, keeping a safe distance behind. By now, Spot was so sick and starved I could hardly stand to look at her. She didn't look like a cow. She looked more like the skeleton of one. She was just skin and bones. She was so weak that she stumbled as she walked. Half a dozen times she went to her knees, and each time I'd think she'd taken her last step. But she'd always get up and go on again, and keep bawling. I kept waiting for her to cross a bare patch of ground where it'd be safe to build a fire. She didn't, and I couldn't drive her, of course. She was too crazy mad to be driven anywhere. I was afraid to mess with her. She might be like the bull. If I ever let her know I was anywhere about, she might go on the fight. I guess she was a mile from the cabin before I saw that she was about to cross a dry, sandy wash, something like the one where Yeller and I had got mixed up with the wild hogs. That would be a good place, I knew. It was pretty far for us to have to come to burn her, but there was plenty of dry wood around. And if I could drop her out there in that wide, sandy wash, there'd be no danger of a fire getting away from us. I hurried around and got ahead of her. I hid behind a turkey pear bush on the far side of the wash. But as sick and blind as she was, I think I could have stood out in the broad open without her ever seeing me. I waited till she came stumbling across the sandy bed of the wash, then fired, dropping her in the middle of it. I'd used up more of my strength than I knew, following Spot so far from the cabin. By the time I got back, I was dead beat. The sweat was pouring off me, and I was trembling all over. Mama took one look at me and told me to get to bed. "We'll go start the burning," she said. "You stay on that leg any longer, and it'll start swelling again." I didn't argue. I knew I was too weak and tired to take another walk that far without rest. So I told Mama where to find Spot, and told her to leave little Arliss with me, and watched her and Lisbeth head out, both mounted on Jumper. Mama was carrying a panful of live coals to start the fire with. At the last minute, Yeller got up off his cowhide. He stood watching them a minute, like he was trying to make up his mind about something. Then he went trotting after them. He was still thin and rough-looking and crippling pretty badly in one leg. But I figured he knew better than I did whether or not he was able to travel. I didn't call him back. As it turned out, it's a good thing I didn't. Only afterward, I wished a thousand times that I could have had some way of looking ahead to what was going to happen. Then I would have done everything I could to keep all of them from going. With little Arliss to look after, I sure didn't mean to drop off to sleep. But I did, and slept till sundown, when suddenly I jerked awake, feeling guilty about leaving him alone so long. I needn't have worried. Little Arliss was right out there in the yard playing with the speckled pup. They had themselves a game going. Arliss was racing around the cabin, dragging a short piece of frayed rope. The pup was chasing the rope. Now and then he'd get close enough to pounce on it. Then he'd let out a growl and set teeth into it and try to shake it and hang on at the same time. Generally, he got jerked off his feet and turned a couple of somersets, but that didn't seem to bother him. The next time Arliss came racing past, the pup would tie into the rope again. I wondered if he wouldn't get some of his baby teeth jerked out at such rough play, but guessed it wouldn't matter. He'd soon be shedding them anyhow. I wondered, too, what was keeping Mama and Lisbeth so long. Then I thought how far it was to where the dead cow lay, and how long it would take for just the two of them to drag up enough wood and get a fire started, and figured they'd be lucky if they got back before dark. I went off to the spring after a bucket of fresh water and wondered when Papa would come back. Mama had said a couple of days ago that it was about that time, and I hoped so. For one thing, I could hardly wait to see what sort of horse Papa was going to bring me. But mainly, this hydrophobia plague had me scared. I'd handle things pretty well until that came along. Of course, I'd gotten a pretty bad hog cut, but that could have happened to anybody, even a grown man. And I was about to get well of that. But if the sickness got more of our cattle, I wouldn't know what to do. Chapter 15. It wasn't until dark came that I really began to get uneasy about Mama and Lisbeth. Then I could hardly stand it because they hadn't come home. I knew in my own mind why they hadn't. It had been late when they'd started out. They'd had a good long piece to go. And even with wood handy, it took considerable time to drag up enough for the size fire they needed. And I couldn't think of any real danger to them. They weren't far enough from the cabin to be lost, and if they were, Jumper knew the way home. Also, Jumper was gentle. There wasn't much chance that he'd scare and throw them off. On top of all that, they had Old Yeller along. Old Yeller might be pretty weak and crippled yet, but he'd protect them from just about anything that might come their way. Still, I was uneasy. I couldn't help having the feeling that something was wrong. I'd have gone to see about them if it hadn't been for little Arliss. It was past his supper time. He was getting hungry and sleepy and fussy. I took him and the speckled pup inside the kitchen and lit a candle. I settled them on the floor and gave them each a bowl of sweet milk, into which I'd crumbled cold cornbread. In a little bit, both were eating out of the same bowl. Little Arliss knew better than that, and I ought to have paddled him for doing it. But I didn't. I didn't say a word. I was too worried. I just about made up my mind to put little Arliss and the pup to bed and go look for Mama and Lisbeth when I heard a sound that took me to the door in a hurry. It was the sound of dogs fighting. The sound came from way out there in the dark, but the minute I stepped outside, I could tell that the fight was moving toward the cabin. Also, I recognized the voice of Old Yeller. It was the sort of raging yell he let out when he was in a fight to the finish. It was the same savage roaring and snarling and squalling that he'd done the day he fought the killer hogs off me. The sound of it chilled my blood. I stood, rooted to the ground, trying to think what it could be, what I ought to do. Then I heard Jumper snorting keenly, and Mama calling in a frightened voice, "Travis! Travis! Make a light, son, and get your gun, and hurry!" I came alive then. I hollered back at her to let her know that I'd heard. I ran back into the cabin and got my gun. I couldn't think at first what would make the sort of light I needed, then recollected a clump of bear grass that Mama had recently grubbed out, where she wanted to start a new fall garden. Bear grass has an oily sap that makes it burn bright and fierce for a long time. A pile of it burning would make a big light. I ran and snatched up 4 bunches of the half-dried bear grass. The sharp ends of the stiff blades stabbed and stung my arms and chest as I grabbed them up, but I'd no time to bother about that. I ran and dumped the bunches in a pile on the bare ground outside the yard fence, then hurried to bring a live coal from the fireplace to start them burning. I fanned fast with my hat. The bear grass blades started smoking, giving off their foul smell. A little flame started, flickered, and wavered for a moment, then bloomed suddenly and leaped high with a roar. I jumped back, gun held ready, and caught my first glimpse of the screaming, howling battle that came wheeling into the circle of light. It was Old Yeller, all right, tangled with some animal as big and savage as he was. Mama called from outside the light's rim, "Careful, son, and take close aim. It's a big lofer wolf gone mad." My heart nearly quit on me. There weren't many of the gray lofer wolves in our part of the country, but I knew about them. They were big and savage enough to hamstring a horse or drag down a full-grown cow. And here was Old Yeller, weak and crippled, trying to fight a mad one. I brought up my gun, then held fire while I hollered at Mama. "Y'all get in the cabin," I yelled. "I'm scared to shoot till I know you're out of the line of fire." I heard Mama whacking Jumper with a stick to make him go. I heard Jumper snort and the clatter of his hoofs as he went galloping in a wide circle to come up behind the cabin. But even after Mama called from the door behind me, I still couldn't fire, not without taking a chance on killing Old Yeller. I waited, my nerves on edge, while Old Yeller and the big wolf fought there in the firelight, whirling and leaping and snarling and slashing, their bared fangs gleaming white, their eyes burning green in the half-light. Then they went down in a tumbling roll that stopped with the big wolf on top, his huge jaws shut tight on Yeller's throat. That was my chance, and one that I'd better make good. As weak as Old Yeller was, he'd never break that throat hold. There, in the wavering light, I couldn't get a true bead on the wolf. I couldn't see my sights well enough. All I could do was guess aim and hope for a hit. I squeezed the trigger. The gun stock slammed back against my shoulder, and such a long streak of fire spouted from the gun barrel that it blinded me for a second. I couldn't see a thing. Then I realized that all the growling and snarling had hushed. A second later, I was running toward the 2 still gray forms lying side by side. For a second, I just knew that I'd killed Old Yeller, too. Then, about the time I bent over him, he heaved a big sort of sigh and struggled up to start licking my hands and wagging that stub tail. I was so relieved that it seemed like all the strength went out of me. I slumped to the ground and was sitting there, shivering, when Mama came and sat down beside me. She put one arm across my shoulders and held it there while she told me what had happened. Like I'd figured, it had taken her and Lisbeth till dark to get the wood dragged up and the fire to going around the dead cow. Then they'd mounted Old Jumper and headed for home. They'd been without water all this time and were thirsty. When they came to the crossing on Birdsong Creek, they dismounted to get a drink. And while they were lying down, drinking, the wolf came. He was right on them before they knew it. Mama happened to look up and see the dark hulk of him come bounding toward them across a little clearing. He was snarling as he came, and Mama just barely had time to come to her feet and grab up a dead chinaberry pole before he sprang. She whacked him hard across the head, knocking him to the ground. Then Old Yeller was there, tying into him, Mama and Lisbeth got back on Jumper and tore out for the house. Right after them came the wolf, like he had his mind fixed on catching them and nothing else. But old Yeller fought him too hard and too fast. Yeller wasn't big and strong enough to stop him, but it kept him slowed down and fought away from Jumper and Mama and Lisbeth. "He had to have been mad, son," Mama wound up. "You know that no wolf in his right senses would have acted that way, not even a big loafer wolf." "Yes'm," I said, "and it's sure a good thing that old Yeller was along to keep him fought off." I shuddered at the thought of what could have happened without old Yeller. Mama waited a little bit, then said in a quiet voice, "It was a good thing for us, son, but it wasn't good for old Yeller." The way she said that gave me a cold feeling in the pit of my stomach. I sat up straighter. "What do you mean?" I said. "Old Yeller's all right. He's maybe chewed up some, but he can't be bad hurt. See, he's done trotting off toward the house." Then it hit me what Mama was getting at. All my insides froze. I couldn't get my breath. I jumped to my feet, wild with hurt and scare. "But Mama," I cried out, "old Yeller's just saved your life. He saved my life. He's saved little Alice's life. We can't..." Mama got up and put her arm across my shoulders again. "I know, son," she said, "but he's been bitten by a mad wolf." I started off into the blackness of the night while my mind wheeled and darted this way and that, like a scared rat trying to find its way out of a trap. "But Mama," I said, "we don't know for certain. We could wait and see. We could tie him or shut him up in the corn crib or someplace till we know for sure." Mama broke down and went to crying then. She put her head on my shoulder and held me so tight that she nearly choked off my breath. "We can't take a chance, son," she sobbed. "It'd be you or me or little Alice or Elizabeth next. I'll shoot him if you can't. But either way, we've got to do it. We just can't take the chance." It came clear to me then that Mama was right. We couldn't take the risk. And from everything I had heard, I knew that there was very little chance of old Yeller's escaping the sickness. It was going to kill something inside me to do it. But I knew then that I had to shoot my big, yellow dog. Once I knew for sure I had it to do, I don't think I really felt anything. I was just numb all over, like a dead man walking. Quickly I left Mama and went to stand in the light of the burning bear grass. I reloaded my gun and called old Yeller back from the house. I stuck the muzzle of the gun against his head and pulled the trigger. Chapter 16, The Last Chapter. Days went by, and I couldn't seem to get over it. I couldn't eat. I couldn't sleep. I couldn't cry. I was all empty inside, but hurting worse than I'd ever hurt in my life. Hurting with a sickness there didn't seem to be any cure for. Thinking every minute of my big, yellow dog, how we'd worked together and romped together. How he'd fought the she-bear off Little Arliss. How he'd saved me from the killer hogs. How he'd fought the man.